go down to Boise State, where Coach Harsin has his weekly press conference after the Utah State win for Boise State against the Aggies.
Offensively, you know, looking back at the last game, you know, you guys have been obviously searching for a game like that to just be clicking and get over 500 yards of offense, and just it had been a long time coming. How nice did it feel, and what did you see when you went back and looked at the tape of what you guys were able to do?
Yeah. Well, we're looking for wins. Yes, I think I'll say it again. Every offensive coordinator would love to have the max yards, max points, everything that you can get offensively. So it was good to see the numbers put up there. Certainly not what we're necessarily planning for each and every week, that we have to hit a certain number. We want to play efficient. We want to play well. We like to get more guys involved. We did that. There was more contributions from other players, which was good. We were able to get a little bit of a rhythm in the pass game. And we were efficient running the ball again, which, you know, when it comes down to it, we threw the ball better, but we still ran the ball effectively. And that's still the key ingredient. So how do we keep doing that? If we can balance it, we look better. You know, we operate better. We're able to move the ball in a variety of ways down the field, which makes it more difficult to defend. And hopefully we can continue that. But that all started, you know, that's a work in progress. And like I told the team in here, you know, things don't always happen. You wish they happened on day one of fall camp. And it's like players. We got guys emerging right now that are getting better at the game of football and better in our systems. We all wish we had it, you know, 3 months ago. But this is where we have it right now. You know, these guys are getting better, which is the number one factor for us. As long as we're improving, then we're doing the things that we talked about at the beginning of the year, and that was going to be our focus. So that showed up in the last game offensively. Defense played well. Special teams still did some good things. Thought we could left a few yards out there on special teams that we could have gotten more out of in our coverage units and return units. And so we got to try to find a way to win that battle again.
Every team wants to finish strong. You know, the fourth quarter is always important. And I know you've talked about that a lot this season. But last season, you know, those numbers were get away. You were outscoring the fourth quarter. But so far this year, you guys have been outscoring the other teams by quite a bit in the fourth quarter. What has been the difference? And what have you been able to do, whether it was in August or whenever, to enable this to happen?
Well, that all started. This started a long time ago. It's always been, you know, for every coach, I think everybody wants to win the fourth quarter. That's why everybody puts their hands up, says fourth quarter. We can all come together. It's really if guys buy into it. That's the most important thing. I think that's the key ingredient. The guys have bought into it. We finish practice that way. We think about it. We go into games. We think about the fourth quarter. We talk about the fourth quarter. I don't know if it's any special thing that we've done other than guys believe in it. And they actually want to go out there and do that. It's amazing when that happens. And we focused on it, so I think we've emphasized it well. But we did last year, too. You know, it's not like last year we didn't win the fourth quarter battle, and now we're sitting there like, we should have emphasized the fourth quarter. You know, we've done that. I've always done that. And I've always been a part of staffs that have done that. It's just, you know, whether your team is going to buy into that. And that's really important to them. If it is, then they have a chance to go out there and put themselves in position to win the fourth quarter. But we, you know, that's to this point. We have a lot of football left. You know, we're going to continue to keep doing that. I have no idea. We'll keep emphasizing it. Hopefully we keep doing it.
I feel like this year, especially over the last couple of weeks, you yourself, Zach Hill, some of the players have talked about, you know, kind of putting egos aside, being selfless. And I feel like you use the word patient a lot this year. How important were all those components to what was kind of a breakthrough performance, I guess, on offense against Utah State?
Yeah. I don't understand that. What are you comparing it to?
I don't know if there were egos before, but I just feel like, you know, just kind of like with like the rotation at quarterback, you know, maybe putting any ego aside from what's traditional and doing whatever it takes to maybe win. And again, I just feel like you've said use the word patience a lot this year, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think absolutely in that, you know, as you put the question that way, we have a lot of guys on this team that rotate in and out. We have a lot of guys that are playing better, that were backups, that are contributing. And especially at the quarterback position, you know, again, we've gone back and we've had the conversation about, you know, is it a two-quarterback system? It's really just an offense is what it is. And we happen to have two quarterbacks that play in that offense, and they have their packages and do different things.
I think you might go beyond even the quarterback. Even Jake Rose said something about it after the game.
Yeah.
He's doing whatever it takes.
Well, that's really how it should be. I don't think that's – let me say this. These guys, the players are doing that. I wouldn't say that's a philosophy that's changed. I've never really known any other way. I mean, you do what you have to do. You got to be selfless. You got to be humble. You got to be hungry. I don't think that's changed, you know, ever since I got into coaching. You know, I've learned it that way. I believe in it. I think the players, it still goes back to that. It's what Dave's asking about. You know, what do they believe in? And if your role is to block, you know, a power play and your role is to catch touchdowns, then that's how we operate, and that's what we're doing this week. And you got to be good with that. So you may get no glory, but you're doing a lot for the team. I think that to me is the mindset. Every week we're a little bit different on defense, offense, special teams. Somebody's going to have probably a little bit more than someone else, at least that we notice. And, you know, that's all part of, you know, just being a selfless player and being part of a team. So it goes back to that. Are we about ourselves? Are we about the team? And I think, you know, it's natural. It's human nature. When things are going bad, all right, everybody kind of goes into self-preservation mode, and it's all about them. And that's exactly the human nature that we have to avoid is, all right, when things get tough, we got to fight for each other. We got to do our job. We got to be selfless in that situation. And I think our team has displayed that. And I think the coaches have too. You know, they sit, you guys don't get to see it. They all sit in that room, they come up with ideas, and it might be this guy's idea, this guy's idea. It doesn't matter as long as it's the best idea. We're going to use it, and it fits our personnel, and this is what we can do. So I think to answer maybe what they were saying, our team is working better together. And it takes a little bit of time, so the patience part of it, like I said, on day one of fall camp, we all want it right now. We want everybody just to be locked in, know everything, play full speed, make no mistakes, you know, never put themselves in a bad position on defense, always running hard on special teams and catch every ball on offense. You know, you want that to happen, and everybody's just perfect. And that's just not the case, you know, and that's not our team. So we got to be, you know, which is not our nature, you know, to be patient sometimes. And you go win a game by 2 points, or you win a game by 20 points. You know, it really doesn't matter. You win the game, and it takes a little bit of time, but you got to allow these guys to develop a little bit.
Everybody seems to be marveling over the two quarterback thing and how you're making it work, but you've been doing it since week one. How has it evolved since week one to what it is now?
Yeah, I think we're learning as we go. Obviously, you can build off of what you've done. That's probably the biggest difference. You try to go back, you self-scout yourself, you look at it, and, all right, we did these things. You know, what's something we can do off of it? Or we did these things and they weren't very good, don't do it again. So I think it's just it's an evolution every week of, you know, how we're going to utilize our personnel. And that includes the quarterbacks, that includes everybody on the offensive side, that includes our defense, special teams. We're moving guys around. It's still evolving. But I think it goes back to the way we look at ourselves, too, and try to figure out, just like Nevada's doing now, they had a bye week. They've watched everything probably twice. They've been in there grinding on film, and we're trying to look at that, too, and go, well, what are they seeing? You know, what do we think that they're going to try to do to come out and stop this? Well, maybe we have an answer for it. You know, maybe we don't do it this week. We've done it for 3 weeks, and you know what? It's kind of run its course, and it's on to something new at this point. So as far as, you know, how we utilize those guys, I think that's a week-to-week thing. It's just really about, you know, what we're doing today, kind of that creativity, you know, what's the theme, what's the plan, what does Nevada do that's going to give us problems, and watching these guys a lot. You know, they're really good. you know, I don't think anything about Nevada, if you want to talk about their record, I don't think that has anything to do with this team. I really don't. So we're going to look at what they're doing, and we're going to try to figure out the best way to attack it and utilize our personnel, and then how can those guys handle it? You know, there's some things we can come up with great ideas, but they might look at you and be like, you know, there's no way I can do that. Or we're sitting there trying to figure out how we're going to practice it and get enough reps on it. So we just got to build off of what we've done.
When you look at Nevada, what are their strengths, and then what has been the difference for them in the last 3 weeks? Because they've had a win over Hawaii and two close losses to Air Force and Colorado State.
Well, their strengths, I think on the offensive side, their quarterback, number six, has played really well. I think he's a big difference maker. Their receivers, they got a couple big guys on the edges that go up and make plays. I think a wide receiver, they're good all around. And, you know, they've been putting points on the board and throwing the ball well. I think a lot of that has to do with their quarterback, number one. Defensively, you know, they're all over the place. They're a 3-3 stack, you know, which they give you a lot of different looks up front. They got safeties and DBs all over the place. It looks like you got 14 guys on the field. When you watch the film, it's just it's difficult to try to figure out where your windows are and what you can do and how you're going to run it. I think they're playing better on the defensive side. And then special teams, I don't know a whole lot about special teams at this point. You know, I've got to go look at that and study those guys a little bit more. But, you know, for us, it really comes down to on special teams, you know, what are we doing in the kick game? How are we covering? You know, what's our return game? Are we actually blocking people or not? It really comes down to some simple things like that. So I think this team is playing well offensively and defensively. And, you know, probably the biggest difference has been their offense has been moving the ball and throwing it really well.
We talked a lot this year about needing guys to step up as playmakers on offense, and you see the other night right from the start, AJ on the first play, and mm-hmm. and Octavius knocks a guy to the ground to get himself open yep. for a touchdown, and Monster almost had two long catches. And since he, how did all of that sort of happen all of a sudden one game? And did you see that coming during the week, or how did you kind of get that breakout performance out of that group?
Yeah, well, we've tried to do that. I don't think that we tried as much as we did this last game. And to answer your question, yes, we felt like that was going to happen. We hoped. And we did feel like at the end of the week it was going to happen. You know, the play we opened up with was something that we felt strongly about and thought it was going to be, you know, a good starter, kind of get Brett going a little bit, and was going to be there. And it was. You know, so right then and there, I mean, right at the beginning of the game, you have confidence. You know, those guys hit it. They hit it the exact same way in practice, the exact same look. So, you know, right out of the gate, it's kind of like, bang, you know, we've already done this. And we got into a rhythm, and we were able to move the ball. And all those guys that stepped up, you know, they had been doing it. You know, Octavius has been doing that. His release, he's really strong. For a young guy, he's really strong. And he, you know, he put his hand on the shoulder pad of the DB and just knocked him down, just flat out beat him, just physically beat him, and they made a great catch. Brett fired one a little bit high, and Octavius went up and grabbed it, and he was in. CT making plays for us, like you mentioned, AJ. Said, obviously, Jake Rowe, again, having another big night. And there was probably some opportunities that we missed in there that other guys could have touched the ball. You know, we had chances for that. Sean Monster coming up with a big third down catch towards the end of the game. And, you know, those are things you hope. I think when we spread the ball out, you know, it helps us. You know, obviously I think it makes us more difficult to defend. But we saw it throughout the week, and we've been trying to get there. I think we practiced better last week. I think our focus was better last week. I think we kind of understood that we needed to throw the ball more effectively. And guys, you know, felt that at practice. And they went out there and executed it. You know, our guys are smart. They get it. We've been running the ball, which we're going to keep running the ball. I mean, that doesn't change. But at some point, they're sitting there like, we need to throw it too, which means we can call pass plays, but we got to be able to go out there and execute them. And so that week in practice, I thought guys practiced extremely hard, you know, on the edges and made those plays, and then it showed up in the game. That's why we had confidence. Quarterbacks had confidence. They made those plays.
You know, when it comes to Jake Rowe, you know, it seemed like he always had a knack for making those like third and four catches this year, but obviously he can stretch the field a little bit at times this year. So just to see the senior season he's having. And then also, what do you think about his arm brace? I feel like it gets bigger each game almost. He's got like some like padding under there now. And then Sam McCaskill recently tweeted out Rowe for Heisman. So can you get behind that too?
Yeah. Yes. Thank you, Sam, for that. Well, let me say this. Jake's always been a very good football player. And obviously his knowledge, he's healthier, I should say. I mean, everybody's a little bit banged up this time of year. But he did a great job. He had some I thought in the game, you know, the two touchdown catches he had, if you watch him, it was not exactly how it was drawn up. Now, the route was, but the way he had to get there, the first one, the safety came down and played a little bit lower than we had practiced. So he adjusted his route a little bit, and then he took it a couple steps further for the timing of it, because he knew Brett, if he went too fast, he's going to be off, and we were a little bit close on the sideline there. So he sped it up, then he deepened it up a little bit, and then made his break, made a great catch. And then the other one that Montel threw him, inside releases, outside releases on the safety, safety jumps outside, inside releases the safety, and then continues to not lose any speed. And, you know, Montel fires a rope to him, and he's in the end zone. So I think it's a combination. You know, he's got some savvy. He's always had that, his experience. He's been practicing well. He's doing a great job of keeping himself as fresh as he can, getting into the game, and I think that's showing up. As far as the brace, I don't know. Yeah, I think you're right. I think every week it's gotten bigger, and I don't know what – he would tell you this, that his arms are getting bigger, so, all right, from lifting. He's been in there doing a lot of curls. But he's – you know, the thing about Roe, too, you talked about, you know, selflessness and all that, and he's the guy that mentioned that. Well, he's the ultimate team guy. And he knows he's going to get the ball, you know, in the game plan. We're going to find ways to try to get it to him. But he's also going to be in there in protections. He's also going to be in there in the run game. He's going to be in there doing all these things that nobody pays attention to until he catches the ball. He's doing so much more than just catching balls out there. And, you know, so and so whatever each week. You know, he's in there and he's in the game plan and he'll throw his body around and he gets a few touchdown catches hopefully and he gets paid for that, you know, with those. And, you know, that's the fun part about, you know, kind of being a player like him is he's going to go out there and do whatever it takes.
You guys, when you played here, Nevada was a big rival, and you know, we talk about rivalries here, and because of the way the Mountain West is structured, some of those traditional rivals you guys had are on the other side, and you don't see them all the time. And
yeah,
what's it like for you guys? I mean, like, do you have a rival, and how do you approach it? Because I know when you played here, you had Idaho, you had Nevada, and things like that, but
yeah,
don't really have that anymore here.
Yeah, you know, it's that's a good question. Nevada's always been a big game. It still is. You know, I think a lot of us, and you know, there's guys in this room that have never played against Nevada. You know, they know about them because we talk about Nevada. So they know about Nevada. They've watched them. They've paid attention to them. Obviously, they're studying them this week and focused on that team. But they don't know it like we know it. You know, how we played them every year and the kind of games we've been in and what it's like to play in their stadium, what it's like when they come here, and just some of those. You know, 07, I don't know what it was, 67, 65, whatever the game was, right? You know, yeah, whatever it was. You know, it was Colin Kaepernick's coming out game and all that. And you know, those guys don't know all those things. And the one thing they do know is when we talked about Nevada beginning of the year, as we looked at our schedule, you know, they could feel that that was a game on the schedule that is important to us. They can feel it this week on Sunday when we came in here and we put to bed the last game, Utah State, and we started talking about Nevada. They could feel that, and they need to be ready to go play. I mean, this is a – so as far as rivalry goes, I think you have to play every single year. I think everybody would say that. Well, you have to play them every year. They got to be a team that you're always you see year in and year out. But I still feel like in my mind, Boise State and Nevada, that's a big game. That's a rivalry game. That's a game that everybody looks forward to. That's a game you want to play in. That's a game that over the years has been really good, you know. And so we get a chance to play them again, and these guys are looking forward to it. And they'll be ready to go. They'll understand a whole lot better. All they got to do is pop on the tape. Watch these guys play. Watch Nevada go out there and get after it. Watch these guys put up points. Watch them get after it on defense. They'll have a whole lot better understanding of what Nevada is all about and how we have to go and prepare ourselves to go play, you know, our best football at this point.
Kind of answered, you know, part of my question there, but you know, their record says they're 1-7, and you're coming off, you know, four wins in a row, and what most people would say is your biggest game of the season at Colorado State in 2 weeks. How do you? These are college kids and stuff. How do you kind of keep them to not have any kind of letdown or look past this game with obviously maybe a season defining game on tap in 2 weeks,
yeah.
And also playing at 5 o'clock at home. Rare earlier time. What do you think about that?
Yeah, fired up for the 5 o'clock game. You have a big recruiting weekend coming up, and you know, to have it at 5 o'clock, that's huge. you know, and I know for our fans that's huge. So our guys are looking forward to that. We've had, I think, the last three games have all been late. So we're looking forward to a little bit earlier game. And, you know, as far as just our mindset, I think it's simple. Just watch football. I think you're crazy. If you start, and I get it, you know, you can't control everything. You know, people are going to say exactly what you asked me. Well, focus on the game ahead. Focus on this game. It's more important and all that. All right, well, just watch football each and every week. You know, this team's whatever wins, and this team's the favorite, and all of a sudden they lose. You can't figure it out in 3.5 hours. If you're not ready, you're not going to figure it out in 3.5 hours. That's why I think one of the most remarkable games, and I haven't even seen it but heard about it, was Ohio State-Penn State. I think everybody turned that game off, and Ohio State comes back and wins it. I got to watch the game to see how they did it. You know, that to me, like that, that's the sign of a focused team. Yes, you didn't play well early on, but you were ready. They were ready. They didn't panic, so they must have prepared themselves for whatever was going to happen in that game to still find a way to win. If you start looking ahead, if we start thinking about other games or teams start thinking about other games, you will get beat. That I can guarantee you. And you can't make that up on a Saturday at 5:30 when you realize, oh, crap, we're not really that prepared. Well, let's really get ourselves excited right now and let's really dial into what we have to do to win this game. It doesn't happen because then you're in the fourth quarter and all of a sudden, you know, you're probably too far behind. It just doesn't work that way. I hope our guys understand that. We talk about that more than anything. Our focus, you know, we're really concentrating on Sunday when it's Sunday and Monday and just day by day because, you know, our guys, we talk about 5 minutes of discipline. I mean, that's the reality in this room right here. Let's just have 5 minutes of discipline at a time, let alone think about 2 weeks ahead. We can't do that. You know, I mean, we're just not able to do those things. We're concentrated on 5 minutes of discipline at a time. And if we can do that, and we can do it through every 5 minutes in practice, you guys have seen the practice plans, every 5 minutes, periods. If we can just do that for 20 periods a day, then we give ourselves a chance. If we start thinking about some other things, we're a really bad football team when we do that.
Was wondering if you could reflect on the progress your offensive line has made since week one, and also kind of a lighthearted question here, but being that it is Halloween tomorrow, favorite Halloween candy and why?
Okay. The O-line first, right?
Yep.
That's easier. I think after the bye week, you know, the bye week came at a good time. We were able to go back, reevaluate what we were doing, where we are, the whole nine. All right. And you start at the most important two positions, O-line and D-line, and you look at that. All right. Those guys, kind of as the O-line and D-line go, we go. And so the offensive line, we looked at it. What were we doing in protection? What were we doing in the run game? What were we not doing, more importantly? And we just started to emphasize certain things with them. They bought into it. I think they could see the importance of it. When you went and had a chance to really watch the film and self-evaluate each guy, they had a chance to do that. They could realize, you know, what we're not doing. And you know, from that point, I think every single week they just had that same mindset. Like, let's go back after the game through that process again and ask yourself a real simple question. What did you learn? Write it down, all right? And whatever that is, we're going to emphasize it that week. You know, the best thing we've done is we played fast and we played physical. Those two things. And when we do that, we can be pretty good up front. When we don't do that, we look very bad. So, really simple. You know, we have to play fast. We have to play physical. We have to keep doing that. If that changes, then we're not going to have the same results that we've had. So I think the O-line understands that. As far as Halloween, you said favorite candy?
Yes, sir.
Oh, I don't really have anything that's that special. I'm kind of a whatever, Kit Kat, Snickers. I like them all. I would probably say favorite. Harrison Boulevard, all right, along there's always the full-size candy bars, all right, it's Baby Ruth, it's Snickers, it's Butterfingers, all right, that is the place to go. So when I didn't even live over there, and I trick-or-treated over there, and I didn't even take a sack, I took a pillowcase, And I would just go back and forth, all right, and sometimes twice. And they realized it, like, you've been here before. And I'm like, no, I have not. So I could get another one until I filled that thing up. So pretty simple. I love, you know, the holidays, you know, at our house. You know, my kids are a little bit older now, but they still enjoy it. They have fun with it. We got some little ones on the staff. So tomorrow night after practice, our coaches will go out. They get to go trick-or-treating with their kids. They'll come back. We'll finish up. So they've been grinding a little bit harder this morning and yesterday to make sure we have a little bit of time for that. And we'll probably have a little fun around here, too, and enjoy it some.
There's enough unhappy people now in that neighborhood.
What's that?
That neighborhood's going to get
a lot of
people coming.
That's not a secret. It's not. No, that's... I think I'm just
making,
yeah, I think that's pretty obvious. Everybody's, I'm sure it's all decked out too. If I haven't been down that way in a while, but I'm sure what I remember, some of those homes, they got it all decked out. They got the whole spiders and webs and all sorts of things out there, creatures in the lawn. And, you know, that's a fun place. That's a fun place to go.
With CT and Octavius, or yeah, and Octavius getting a chance to kind of make their, probably the biggest catches of their college career so far. Usually you remember like your first couple catches as a college football player. So I don't know if there was like a fun moment there or anything like that. But obviously Octavius was a little jazzed after he scored his first touchdown too.
Yes, and he handled it really well. All right, he didn't spike the ball. He didn't do anything crazy. He acted like he'd been there before. you know, I think for Octavius, that was more of just a lot of hard work paid off on that one play. And the way he set it up, the way he got himself open, the catch he made, and it wasn't, you know, a lot of yards, but it was a big play for us in the game. You know, to me, that just kind of, you know, what he's all about. He's been working extremely hard. He's trying to get better. He's learned. And I thought, back to your question, he did have his best practice all year last week. So his confidence, everybody's confidence goes up. And I thought Cartrell was the same way. You know, Cartrell did a really good job. He had the catch over the middle, and he had to fight through a defender. And one of the things that he's really had to work on is being physical. You know, not being the biggest guy or the heaviest guy. When somebody puts their hands on him, they're going to reroute him, get him off his track, and that didn't happen. You know, the guy actually grabbed him, held him, and he drove right through that, snapped it off, made the catch, and then a big point of emphasis with all of our wide receivers, just ball security. And you watch him, he had this, in a second catch, he catches a little bubble out there and gets vertical, and then right before he gets hit, he's covering the ball up. So he's doing the little things, and I thought he had his best week of practice. You know, so that's what I'm talking. You talk about patience. You know, we talked about here kind of that same idea and thought on Sunday is it takes a little bit of time. And I've used Matt Locker as an example. Well, Matt, you know, again, I thought he played well in the game, had a couple of hurries on the quarterback. And, you know, here's a guy that's just put in the time. And sometimes, you know, if guys can just see that and they can have a little patience and not everything is just instantaneous, you're not going to get it that way. If it's really worth it and it's something that, it's hard to do. It's going to take some time. And so, you know, for Cartrell and for Octavius and even AJ, you know, in that game, it just takes time. You know, like I said, everybody wants it right away. And you got to work for it. You got to go out there and practice for it. You got to show up every day and be ready on game day because of that. And then all of a sudden you can have some big moments like that.
A lot of teams around the country, when they play at home, the night before the game, they'd stay at a hotel. And I think you guys just started recently doing that. Is that right?
Last year.
Yeah. Tell me a little about, you know, kind of how that was, you know, why you decided to do that and what the benefits are and why you guys kind of decided to start doing that.
Yeah, we hadn't done it for a lot of years, and we won a bunch of games not doing it. And I don't think it has anything to do with our guys. I really don't. I just think it has to do with there's more distractions now than there were in the past. And we meet with our guys on Friday. So, you know, back in the old days, all right, you'd meet with the guys on Friday, and we get done about 8:30, and they'd all go home. And, you know, those guys would go home. And now whatever they did, they showed up the next day, and they were ready. today's just different. You know, there's more distractions. There's more things that you don't want to have happen because you don't quite always have the control of where your guys are at. you know, even in their own homes. And here's the thing, you know, families come in on home games. And there's not just family, but, you know, there's family that might be staying with them. There's brothers and sisters that might be staying with them. There's friends that might be staying with them. And you just spend an entire week preparing yourself physically and mentally to go out there and play and to have the right frame of mind. And then, you know, when you don't have them for, you know, an evening, you know, some of those things can change. And I think having a guy, having our guys in a hotel, you know, where they can be around each other, I think they appreciate it more than it is just for us to have our guys around us. I think they appreciate the fact that, you know what, I don't have to go home and be around, you know, everybody that's at my house and entertain everybody until midnight and then still be thinking about what I have to do in this game and getting myself ready. And, you know, I'm trying to be polite, I'm trying to be nice, I'm trying to be a good host, but I got to play a game tomorrow morning. You know, I got to get up and get ready, and I got a game that I got to be ready for. I think that's the biggest reason, just talking to some of our guys. When I first brought it up and asked them, you know, the leadership group, they're all nodding. There wasn't one guy in there was like, no way. They're all like, yes. Yes, that sounds like a good idea. That way it just takes, you know, them having to worry about that stuff off their plate. They got a hotel room. They have a roommate. They got food. They got video. They got coaches around them. They can stay focused. And then it keeps it consistent on away games and home games. Just your routine. When we get done here, we go to the hotel. We have what we do at the hotel. And that's consistent away and at home.
When you do that for an 8 o'clock home game, do you keep them all day or do you send them home?
No, we keep them. Yeah. So check out whenever we have our pregame meal. We still come back. So we don't we used to have our meals on Friday nights at the sub. We don't do that. We just do it at the hotel, which is like we do on the road. And then on game day, they bus over here for pregame meal. We have it at the Student Union building. And then we do our walk and do all our pregame stuff from there. Good. What's that? Oh, yes, Sam Whitney. So Sam Whitney is he'll have surgery. He was injured last week in practice, and so he'll have he's got a surgery on his knee for his patella tendon. So that will he'll do that tomorrow, which will not allow him to play the rest of the season at this point. So he is out. He did travel with us last week, so we kind of knew, but we already had him on the travel roster. It happened later in the week of practice, so he traveled with us, and he'll have surgery tomorrow, and we'll get him back on the mend.
That was Coach Brian Hartson down at Boise State talking about the Utah State game, looking ahead to Nevada. That at the end, Sam Whitney looks like he's going to be out for the season with surgery on a patella. Also mentioned about how this team is selfless. He seemed like he was pleased with more playmakers in that game against Utah State. Mentioned Nevada is a big game. He said the rivalry word, but he also mentioned some of the reasons why it is an unfamiliar opponent, and the rivalry could be unfamiliar to some of the players. But Fish, the most important thing is about him and his candy bar habits. He likes them full size, something about Harrison Boulevard, bringing a pillowcase.
He was given out the location of the house that gives out the full-size candy bars. That is the most important thing to know on Halloween, Chris.
Yeah, he was giving out the information.
That was the most important thing to take from that press conference.
So we all know
where you
to
hit
go.
Up the full-size candy bars. But you don't like candy bars, Chris.
No, I don't want the Kit Kats or the Snickers. I don't like chocolate. So basically, where can I get the Skittles and the Starburst?
No. What you're going to do is you're going to come with me. I'll go to the door. Get my full size. You'll go to the door, get the full size, and I'll just take yours, and then I'll buy you a 50 cent Skittles.
You sound just like my brother. My brother does that.
When you don't like chocolate, Chris, you...
Halloween becomes a little bit
yeah,
of a
Halloween
problem.
Becomes maybe one of the worst holidays.
A little bit. Speaking of Halloween, do you need a costume? Do you got to go trick-or-treating? You can hit up Twin Peaks on Halloween for lunch or after work and pick up your free Caves, Prater, or JP mask and flask. Check out the leather and lace Twin Peaks girls. Grab lunch or happy hour with Caves and Praters and get your mask and flask. It's real scary and exclusively from Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket. Bob will join us at 2 o'clock, but me and Fish, we got to talk about what went down in the baseball game yesterday because it was the wildest, most bananas, crazy, ridiculous, filthy baseball game I've ever seen. That's next on Sports Radio, The Ticket. There's a lot of great parts about living in Boise. So many that it's really hard to list them all out. But maybe number one on the list, and this is speaking as somebody who has grown up in the Philadelphia area, went to school at Syracuse. The best part is it's not on the East Coast. And when you have these baseball games that are 5 hours and 17 minutes long, and these are important games. It's not like you could skip them. It's not like you can just not watch the World Series between the Dodgers and the Astros when a series is tied 2-2. Game five is, what they say, pivotal. It's a pivotal game five. Both teams need to get it done. So you can't tune away. 5 hours, 17 minutes. At the time this ended, it was, what, after 1 o'clock Eastern time? Well, luckily, it wasn't that late here. 13-12 after 10 innings. Houston over Los Angeles in a game that I thought was the craziest, wildest, most insane baseball game that I've ever seen.
Wait, aren't we talking about game two?
See, that's the thing. Like, game two was just a week ago, a few days ago, and game two had, was it, three extra inning home runs,
yep,
and the lead changing back and forth in that game, and then Houston coming back with a home run in the ninth inning. You thought that might have been one of the best World Series games. In fact, I think I asked Bob at the time, was that one of the best World Series games that he's ever seen? I'm waiting to see what he has to say about this one. Again, he'll be joining us at 2 o'clock. But you had seven home runs yesterday. You had the Astros coming back from three different deficits with home runs. Then you had the Dodgers coming back in the ninth inning. Then you had Houston taking the lead and winning the game in the 10th. 22 home runs in the World Series, most of any. 101 home runs this postseason, most out of any. I think my favorite stat from the game of wildness was the fact that there were five plays where the win probability shifted 25%. Now, it sounds like it's a little nerdy, but it just goes to show you five plays where they were just hugely dramatic, jaw-dropping, oh-my-God moments. And the only other World Series game that's had that was game two.
It's like
in baseball history we're talking about.
It's like they heard that everyone said, oh, we need a Yankees-Dodgers World Series to compete with the NFL. So the Astros said, all right, we can top that.
We got this. Yo, got to the game in Houston. And like I have written down like the three most interesting things. And I have written down the whole baseball juiced argument. And do you think they are juiced? And what if they are? Do you like it? Do you not? Is this the kind of style of baseball you like? But I feel like we don't have enough time to get into any of those deep discussions. We'll do it with Bob. So let's just go with some of the random stuff that we saw, the silliness, because
yes,
I'm all about the silliness. That game gave us plenty of silliness. Number one, you mentioned like Houston providing some fun. I love that train noise. That train noise just would not stop. It was going constant. I felt like the whole game was being played right next to the train tracks. And I'm still trying to figure out. I'm not familiar with the geography of Houston, but there's nothing about Astros that says trains.
They did a feature, and I forgot why they put a train up there. I think they just put it up there for fun.
I'm
90% sure they put it up there for fun.
And it's just constantly going on because a home run, base hit, double that ties it, extra base hit here, extra base hit there. And it's just a constant like train moving. And I wouldn't be surprised if it's going to be stuck in Clayton Kershaw's head for the rest of time. Because Clayton Kershaw couldn't get it done in that game,
no,
too. Supposed to be the best pitcher in the game of baseball. And he had two separate leads that he could not hold on to. All right, so there was that. You had the fact that, again, we're just talking randomness here. Y'all see that home run where the fan went in, you know, made this lady made a great catch on it, and the lady's, I don't know, husband or boyfriend or whoever, you know, she was there with, was like kind of happy. Yeah, look at that. You got the ball. And then you got this homie that's next to this couple who got the most angry look on his face, looking like he just saw the worst movie of all time and was just so ticked off about it. He went and grabbed the baseball from the lady, and with the meanest look, like this wasn't like a mean mug trying to be cool. No, he looked like he was angry, like he was about to do something. He grabs the baseball from her and throws it back onto the field.
I would have thrown him onto the field. There's only one place you throw baseball back, and that's Wrigley. You don't throw him back anywhere else.
Billy, they do it, but like,
no,
you can't literally steal the baseball from her and throw it back.
If you can't catch it, you don't get to throw it back.
He's all shaking his head. No, he's all mad. His face is turning red. He grabbed the baseball for the lady and threw it back Who is this dude? Who does he think he is?
He needs a stadium ban.
Yeah.
Lifetime stadium ban.
Forget the guy who jumped into the bullpen in Dodger Stadium early on in this series. That guy can come back.
Yeah, that guy can come back. Ban, I want a lifetime ban on this man.
This homie needs to be taken out. O-U-T. All right. A-Rod's teeth, man. They've reached a level of brightness that's just unreal. He's on the post-game and pre-game set, but it was really noticeable post-game because this dude likes baseball so much that that game just sent him on a whole different level of happiness. So he could not hide his grin the entire post-game show. And I tweeted out, we could have turned off the lights at that stadium, and we still would have been fine because of A-Rod's teeth.
Yeah, A-Rod could have lit the whole stadium.
Yeah, A-Rod's teeth is just on a whole different level.
Maybe we should put him on the front of the train. So the
Why
train
is he
has
not in a commercial? Why does he not have a commercial where he's talking about some toothpaste?
That toothpaste may make his teeth less white.
Yeah, it's true. The toothpaste is going to make it a little bit grayer, a little bit yellow. I don't know, man. That he got money. He can take care of his grill. We know that for sure. And another other random notes. The last one I have right here. And again, we'll get to more of the strategic and what exactly we saw in that wild baseball game yesterday. Yeah, that home plate umpire. Watch that Geico commercial where that referee, you know what I'm talking about, where the referee over-explains things?
Yep.
The home plate umpire was mic'd up because they have the mics open as the pitch hits the glove. So if the umpire says something pretty close before they cut that mic off, you'll hear it. And every ball, you hear like a detailed explanation from the home plate umpire. And it was great. Give me more of the Geico umpire is what I'm calling him, because it fit the Geico commercial so much of the ref that over-explains things. Something about it.
He's ordering
he's ordering
a salad. And
he can't get his nachos or he can't get his potato tots because they don't have them. And he goes into too much detail at the restaurant. This umpire went into too much detail describing every ball. But, hey, I'm not complaining. That might have been part of the reason why this game was 5 hours, though. 5 hours and 17 minutes.
Definitely contributed, yeah.
Yeah. The fact is, what was it, like 4.5, 4:40 before it even went to extra innings?
Mm-hmm.
So you can't even blame the whole fact that we had an extra inning in this game. This would have been the longest 9-inning World Series game of all time, even if there was no extra innings aboard on this. Yo, man, it was crazy. It was wild. And we still have another one of these. Game 6, I'm sorry. LA.
Maybe two more, too.
Could. I don't think we remember what I kept saying.
Can we handle a third one of these in game 7?
Hashtag Houston is, if this goes 7, though, well, I thought last year's game 7 was bananas between Cleveland and Chicago. This game 7, if it gets there, and I think it'll end in 6 with Verlander, but look out. Need a Halloween costume? Got to go trick-or-treating. Hit Twin Peaks on Halloween for lunch or after work and pick up your free Cage Prater or JP mask and flask. Check out the Leather and Lace Twin Peaks girls. Grab lunch or happy hour with Gaze and Prater and get your mask and flask. It's real scary and exclusively from Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM The Tickets. Up next, it is Quick Hits, where Fish and I tackle four topics rapid-fire fashion, including somebody in the NFL stole the show yesterday. That's next on Sports Radio The Ticket.
Quick Hits with Bob and Chris. Topic number one.
No Bob today. He will join us here coming up at 2 o'clock to talk baseball. But Chris and I get to talk about the NFL. And Chris, who had the performance of the week in the NFL this weekend?
Somebody who got the L. Somebody who captured that. Not really a beatdown. They just were a victim of Russell Wilson doing Russell Wilson things at the end of the game. But I think most people left it more impressed with Deshaun Watson than anything else. 19 of 30, 402 yards. And he was lighting them up through the passing game throughout the game. In fact, it was pretty much the best performance that anybody has had on the road against the Seahawks since this whole Legion of Boom thing started. Now, he did throw 3 interceptions, and one of them being a pick 6, so you can say the Seahawks got their pound of flesh. But after the game, Deshaun Watson was so good. He was good enough. Richard Sherman said that he's going to be a top 5 quarterback pretty soon. Now, Richard Sherman being complimentary of a guy on the other team, we know that's not always
the
case.
That doesn't happen very
often.
Just
ask Michael Crabtree about what Richard Sherman could be saying about you after the game. And I saw a good chunk of this game. Yo, Deshaun Watson is the real deal. Like, I was less impressed with the Chiefs game than a lot of people were, even though he threw for a lot of yards. Garbage time, junk time, Chiefs were playing a little soft, and that's when Watson got a lot of these stats. Now, in this game, he was driving the ball down the field. Bill O'Brien had some plays designed up. to take advantage of his mobility. Will Fuller V, because he has a V on the back of his jersey. Apparently, he's the fifth Will Fuller.
I guess.
Yeah, he's fast. He's really fast, and he gets a. What does he have? Like 9 touchdowns on 11 catches.
7 touchdowns
like
on
that?
13 catches.
What kind of pace is this?
If you're a Packers fan and you're worried about Aaron Rodgers, just look at Will Fuller V. He broke his collarbone in the preseason.
That's true. You don't need your collarbone.
Yeah, you clearly you don't.
Because he's at a different level. And yes, to me, he was the standout player of this week in the NFL.
Topic number 2.
All right, how did Bill O'Brien, though, justify Bill Belichick decision from 2009?
Well, we all remember the Bill Belichick decision from 2009, Colts Patriots. Neither team can stop anyone. Both teams had over 400 yards of offense. Bill Belichick has the ball at his own 28-yard line at the 2-minute warning. What does he do? Instead of punting it, giving it back to Peyton Manning, 4th and 2, he goes for it. Kevin Falk doesn't get the first down. Peyton Manning leads him back. The Patriots lose that game 35-34. Well, Bill O'Brien, in almost a very similar situation, you had not stopping Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson ended up throwing for 450 yards. The Seahawks had punted just once in the second half, and their only drive that was under 20 yards besides that was when they started at the 8. He has a 4th and 2 from his own 28-yard line with a minute 42 left. What does he do? He punts the ball to Russell Wilson, who goes 3 plays, 80 yards, and wins the game. I think that proves it's better to lose going for it on 4th down than trusting a defense that's already given up 34 points.
I just hear both coaches resulted in L's. I don't think there was a right decision by any of those coaches. They lost both of those games. I don't know if you could prove one being right, one being wrong.
Well, remember,
they both
everyone was freaking out back. Why didn't you punt the ball? Put your defense on. Well, that's why I didn't punt.
So they couldn't win for losing?
Exactly.
No decision they could have made ended up working out. That's perhaps the case. With Bill O'Brien, I just find it hilarious that he's been put in this position where he has to be quarterback or be a play caller for mobile quarterback guy, because he's all about the traditional drop back. I have to have somebody to fit my offense. He gets somebody who fits his offense, quote unquote, unlike, almost a square peg in a round hole. And it's about as good as any offense that he's had with the Houston Texans.
Topic number 3.
All right, Chris, what was the most chilling thing you read today?
Breanna Stewart, who's a women's basketball player, legend at UConn, now in the WNBA. Seattle Storm is the team she plays on. She wrote a thing in the Players Tribune, and it goes into detail about how she was molested as a child. It's really striking. It's emotional. It hits at your feelings, so I suggest that you read it, because there's nothing I can say right here to do it justice. All I'll say is, man, it took some courage to write that. Like, it really hit home.
Topic number 4.
Why is tonight a must-win for the Chiefs?
It's hard to say that after the Chiefs started 5-0, that it's a must-win, but they play the Broncos. The Broncos are 3-3. If the Broncos were to win this game, which is in Arrowhead, by the way, the Chiefs would have a half-game lead on the Broncos in the division, minus the tiebreaker, because the Broncos are on the head-to-head, and they'd have to go 2 Mile High week 17 should it come down to it. So the Chiefs need to win this game. If they win, they'll have a 2.5-game lead in the division. Big difference between 2.5 games and no one else over 500 and only having a half-game lead and losing 3 straight games in a row.
Yeah, it's true. I don't believe in the Chiefs anyway. Enjoy a Prater Hater lager beer while they last. Go to the Ram in Boise off Broadway or in Meridian at Eagle Road in Pine. Enjoy them by the pint, but don't wait because it won't last past November 19th. Get your limited edition Prater Hater 22-ounce bottles and t-shirts at the Ram on Broadway in Boise. Up next, Bob Beeler comes back and he gives his perspective on the wildness in Houston from yesterday on The Ticket.
Wow, what a World Series we've had, and we will have at least one more game Tuesday night. The Astros now in the position to try to close it out with their ace, Justin Verlander. The Dodgers last night, Clayton Kershaw with a 4-0 lead, and then was given another reprieve where they had a 7-4 lead, and he couldn't hold either one of them. And Chris Lewis, this World Series, kind of a microcosm of what we've seen all season, where there have been an awful lot of home runs by a lot of different people, a lot of strikeouts, and I think the public, the NFL last night, was beaten in the ratings. The Dodgers game with the Astros got better ratings on Fox than the NBC television game with the Steelers and Lions, and I think baseball is trying to make the most of what they think is a pretty exciting postseason.
Yeah, 101 home runs this postseason, 101, most ever. And, yeah, we still got another game. 22 home runs in the World Series. the most home runs in any World Series. And yes, we have a game to go. At least we could have a couple of more games. And yeah, I'm going to guess about 10 home runs will be hitting in game six, because that's just the way it goes. And this being the second highest World Series scoring game in World Series history, I ask you, with everything that you saw yesterday, and we'll get to the baseballs being juiced and if they're juiced and what any impact and whether you like it. We'll get to that in a second. But Mr. Bob Beeler, Mr. Baseball here in Boise, was that the best World Series game that you've ever seen?
Well, when you take into account that your team is not in it, I'd say yes, because there was a lot of strategy involved. There certainly was a lot of offense. There was a lot of comebacks. You never felt like, you know, either team was over. I thought the Dodgers were going to tie it in the ninth inning, just because that's the way this series has played. You mentioned the 101 number. Well, Clayton Kershaw had pitched in 101 games in his career with a four-run lead. Only the second time the Dodgers have not won when he has been able to do it. But, yeah, I think it's been exciting. People like to see the long ball. People like to, you know, feel like they're on the edge of their seat. I think there have been some mismanagements, you know, on both sides of how they've handled things. But as far as sheer excitement goes, I think it's exactly what baseball has needed. And, you know, I might like the 1-0 game and the pitcher's duel in a game that's, you know, played in, you know, 2.5 hours. But I think a lot of people don't like the pitcher's duels, don't like games that, you know, where you're going to bunt, you're going to play for one run. Last night I thought one of the gaffes was late in the game. I think when you're managing, you got a sense, is this a high-scoring game, is this a low-scoring game? And I think Dave Roberts blew it when he went for a sacrifice bunt late. The game was 7-7. Runs were cheap. You could get a three-run inning fairly easily last night. So I think you've got to realize what kind of game you're in, how you want to manage your offensive strategy as well as your defensive strategy. And how about the fact that maybe a game turned on whether you said no or whether you said go.
Yeah, that's funny, because we had the official on random observations, and that one didn't come up. And yeah, that third base coach for the Dodgers apparently wasn't loud enough. And I was saying, they need LeVar Ball to be the third base coach, because trust me, LeVar Ball would have been loud enough for the Dodgers to be able to hear whether he should go or no. He would not have left it out to doubt about what the third base coach was saying.
Now, would Taylor have scored? I would have sent him. If I was coaching third base, I would have sent him. I would have wanted to see if they could make the play, you know, because you got to have a relay, you got to have a tag, you got to have everything. And especially with the rules now blocking the plate, you might have a chance at a review of getting a run anyway. But to think that, you know, the words no and go are so close together, you know, yes, stay, you know, where are the hand signals and where are you picking that up? But I don't know. I think it was a tough one for the Dodgers. Maybe they could have gotten in another run there, but I guess we'll never know.
I mean, Houston in six is what I've been saying, and Houston in six is how it's shaping up. And
But when do you think, though, tonight, I mean, I would say when the Dodgers won game four and they had Kershaw on a 4-0 lead, I'm thinking, boy, you know, I'm looking good for the Dodgers in six, maybe the Dodgers in seven. Tonight or tomorrow night, it sure looks good for Houston in six, but the way this game has been played, now, Dodger Stadium is significantly a tougher hitter's park than is the bandbox called Minute Maid Park, especially from the center field to the left field side with the Crawford boxes. But would it surprise you if Verlander gets hit around tonight or tomorrow night?
The phrase,
yes,
does
right?
This surprise you? We're just coming off of a game that was 13-12 where the Astros had three different home runs that tied a game, and then the Dodgers right. had three runs in the ninth inning to tie the game. And nothing's going to surprise me at this point, because everything's surprising me at this point. It's been a bananas World Series. Yeah. Five plays in this last game where the win probability shifted 25%. Which means there was five plays that were just sheer nuts in this game, and the only other World Series that has had that many was game two of this World Series. So it goes to show you what is just gone nuts about baseball now. But I one thing I noticed from your answer, though, you said people like the 13-12 game. People like the home runs, but you didn't say you liked. So I'm getting the feel from how you're describing it. You don't like this baseball. This isn't your thing. You don't like what you're seeing here.
I would rather see more pitching and more finesse and more small ball. I personally would rather see that. I don't mind home runs, but last night to a certain extent was pinball. I think last night also showed some interesting thing on substitutions. We've watched how managers have gone through the bullpen. They've maybe put people in too soon. They've had guys in the game because they didn't have anything left. I think one of the beauties of baseball, and why I think I would rather watch a baseball series than an NBA series, is the substitution rule. You can only bat whoever's up 1-9. If you take somebody out of the game, they're gone. You've got to use your bench, so more people are a factor in the game. Like Gurriel the other night, last night, getting pinch run at second base by Maben. McCann getting pinch run at second base. If McCann doesn't score on the game, so it worked out well for Hinch. But if they don't get the hit there and it goes another inning, you lose your catcher and you lose a pretty good hitter in Brian McCann. And that inning that the Astros win it goes with a hit by pitch, a walk, and a single. And that's how they win the game.
So you'd rather see Evan Gattis at the plate instead of Jose Altuve with the game on the line, you're saying. You like it? You think it's more fun when Josh Reddick is at the plate instead of Jose Altuve to close? I mean, like, I understand your point that the randomness of
it.
But for the highlight of drama, it's still more fun when Altuve has the bat in his hands at the end, or Bryce Harper,
Turner. But you can't call timeout and just bring up Altuve again in the ninth inning after batting in the eighth inning. I love it. I think that's the beauty of the game.
Yeah, better for narrative. It's like, hey, if Derek Fisher was forced to take the Lakers last shot instead of Kobe Bryant, but now, of course, I brought up Derek Fisher's name because he actually did score the game-winning run in this game. Not that Derek Fisher, but a Derek Fisher. And that just also added to the wildness of the game. Now, the one thing that I think will be remembered the longest, although it's hard to tell what will be remembered the longest from this game, but Clayton Kershaw. Having two separate leads, 4-0 and then 7-4, and not being able as a pitcher to hold on to either, as a Cy Young Award winner multiple times, as the best pitcher in the game, according to anybody who actually studies this. Mm-hmm. And for him not to be able to, in this spot, hold a World Series lead in a pivotal game 5, like, what does that do to how we perceive Clayton Kershaw?
I'd love to ask that question to the Dodgers if they don't get the World Series done. I mean, this is their year. I mean, this has been their year. Everything has gone perfectly. It's a 2-2 game, and you're up 4-0 with him in the fifth inning. How much money do you think the Dodgers would have bet that they'd have gotten that game close?
Yeah, not like 4-0. You still mess up, yet your squad bails you out and gives you 3 more runs in the next frame, the next half inning, and you still can't use that enough. You get taken out, and he wasn't the one who gave up the home run to tie it at 7, but he let the base runners on and couldn't last long enough for them to change the pitchers, and he ended up not being good enough. And for a game that had 2 Cy Young Award winning pitchers, starting the game in a World Series, for the final score to be 13-12, if Cy Young Award winners don't have a chance in the World Series, if they don't have a chance in baseball in 2017, how can I expect anybody else to? This might be kind of the we're not going back point, because I don't see how this changes. This isn't a fluke. This was the most home runs hit in the regular season ever in baseball, the most home runs hit in the postseason ever in baseball, the most home runs hit in the World Series ever in baseball. At a certain point, it's not a fluke. This is how the game is right now. And if Cy Young Award winners can't hold up on the highest stage, how are we supposed to expect anybody else to hold up on the highest stage? And if this is what baseball is going forward, give me more of it. Give me all of it. Because say what you want, long balls, lead shifts, anybody is a threat at any point in the lineup. You can't turn away from this. And this is what baseball should be. The steroid era saved baseball from the strike that everybody was so upset about. And now everybody in retrospect says they don't like the steroid era, but it showed that people did watch it and it was captivating. If we go back to baseball kind of like it was without risking the long-term health of the players because they're taking steroids and that probably would be at risk for your long-term health, if we can get that kind of baseball without putting the players' long-term health in danger, that is the perfect storm. I want that. Bring it on.
We'll see if they can market it, bottle it, and keep it, and have the public embrace it. I'll leave you with this, Chris. Since 1969, and I picked that year because that was the first year of the playoffs, the World Series has gone 3-2 through 5, and it would have to go 3-2 through 5. It's impossible for it to be anywhere else and still playing. But going back to the park of the team that has won two needing to win two. They've done it nine times. So better than 50% of the time, the team needing to win two at home has done it. The visiting team has won series seven times. Four times they've closed it out in the sixth game, and three times they've won it in the seventh game. So history kind of on the side that says the Dodgers come back and win two, but you stand there and you see Justin Verlander going to the mound. I think it looks pretty good for the Astros if regular baseball kind of prevails. If it's all this hitting and running and home runs, who knows whether even he can get people out.
Hashtag Houston in six.
We'll see. Need a Halloween costume? Got to go trick-or-treating? Hit Twin Peaks on Halloween for lunch or after work and pick up your free Caves, Prater, or JP mask. Check out the leather and lace Twin Peaks girls. Grab lunch or a happy hour with Caves and Prater, and then get your mask and flask. It's real scary and exclusively from Sports Radio 93.1 FM at 1350 AM, The Ticket. Up next, we'll talk some Boise State football. Is Boise State's offense ready to roll in the month of November to carry them to a Mountain West championship? More to come on Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio, The Ticket. Boise State's offense started slowly throughout the month of September, but the offense has turned the corner in the month of October. It started with the line getting better. It started with the running game picking up, and then culminated Saturday night in Logan with the passing game turning in its best performance of the year, 370 yards and five touchdowns in a 41-14 rout of Utah State. The defense, Chris, has been, maybe minus the Virginia game, has been so on point all season, made things very difficult for opposing offenses. But it was the offense that has kind of developed as the month of October is moving along. And it looks to me, if this Boise State team that we've seen show up the last couple of weeks, certainly the last three halves, this is a team, Chris, that has a very good opportunity to notch a Mountain West championship. And depending on how things shake out, you know, maybe you get some upsets in some other conferences. A New Year's Six?
Yeah, that's still a while off. Still got a lot of things to work out in the American Conference, even if there's like there needs to be some crazy upsets, because even if like some of the top teams beat the other top teams, well, then the top teams that win those games will look pretty good because that league is valued highly. But just look at Boise State to this point. Are all their problems gone? Like, are you worried about anything? Got no worries now?
Oh, no. You absolutely have to have worries.
What? What are you worried about? What should you be worried about? The offense is fixed. Defense is good. Special teams is really good. So why, as a Boise State fan, should you be worried? what's concerning?
Well, you've got a couple of tough games to come. You've got Colorado State on the road, and then you've got a home game with Air Force, and Air Force looks like they're playing a little bit better. You've got, you know, a game where maybe all of a sudden you have some turnovers that come out of the blue. No, I mean, I think, is this team the best team in the conference? Yes, I think it is. But I think they've gotten there because they've managed this team well. They've used a lot of different players. There aren't, like, a lot of NFL standouts. They've used a lot of spots, not just quarterback, where they've used multiple people at the position and made this season go. I think it's a team that's improved greatly since the start of the season, especially on the offensive side of the ball. But, no, I wouldn't think that you could just put it in the deep freeze and say, you know, championship now.
No, I mean, I'm not necessarily saying that. I'm just saying, like, I don't know what area you could be worried about anymore. You could have the game where you just turn it over a bunch of times.
Sure.
Like, it happens in college football all the time. You'll have a game where, like, I wrote this down. Problems are problems until they're not. Like, Boise State's offensive line was a problem until it stopped becoming a problem. They fixed it. The quarterback thing was a problem for Boise State until it wasn't in the last couple of weeks, where Rippon and Cozart have coexisted in a way that is better than what it was before. And over the most of the season, the receiving group was a problem until yesterday it wasn't, when you had guys like Richardson and Thomas and Evans and Monster all get involved with multiple catches. But on the same token, strengths are strengths until they're not. But it's not like you can anticipate when it won't be a strength anymore. Like, the defense, you mentioned the Virginia game. There was nothing before the Virginia game, and there's nothing after the Virginia game that would lead you to think that the defense would have a performance like that again. Could it happen? Yes. But it's not like I'm worried about it.
Right.
Like, could the offense suddenly stop playing well again? Yeah, it could. But it's not like there's a sign right now that's popping out at you to be like, all right, the offense could be hitting a slump. That's not what has been shown over the last three halves of football for Boise State. So, yeah, you can lose any game because you suddenly stop playing well and things that were going well stop going well. But as of right now, no, I don't look at any aspect of this team and think that I'm worried about it.
Right. I mean, the only thing that worried me as the game went along against Utah State, David Moa left the game. Durant Miles left the game. It was announced today at the very end of the press conference. I think it was after the press conference, but that Sam Whitney was having surgery, so a little bit less depth at defensive end. Frazier and Weaver now, and they had seemingly lately played the, you know, maybe the lion's share of the plays, and maybe because it had been because Whitney was hurt, but he's having surgery and he's not going to play the rest of the year. You know, if you lose people of that caliber up front, then all of a sudden one of the things that I think has made this defense so good has been the depth and the ability to rotate at defensive line. You know, Coach Harsin sort of said everybody was fine, so I guess that means good news for Miles and Moa, but that is the thing that always, as the season moves along, you know, attrition and who you lose, that's a big factor that can derail a season very quickly.
Yeah, over the last couple of years, late in the year, Boise State's had injuries, and people want to, you know, harp on the late losses, but a lot of it is because, especially on defense, Boise State's depth and some of their starters, you know, they got hit late in the year, and that's why the defense kind of dropped off. If everybody stays healthy, that's the other thing. Like, I'm assuming health, which might be a dangerous thing, but if everybody remains generally healthy, then the point stands. The defense can have a bad game, but there's going to be nothing that you've seen prior to it that leads you to think that a bad game is on the horizon for Boise State defensively. So you're trying to think of other areas that could be the downfall. Well, again, was there any signs going into the Air Force game 3 years ago that seven turnover game was going to happen? No, there wasn't any signs.
No.
Was there any signs the year after that going into the Utah State game in Logan that a eight turnover game was coming? No. Was there any signs going into the BYU game last year that, what was it, six turnovers that Boise State had in their win against BYU, or five or something like that? Was there any signs going into it? No. So, like, that's, you're just going to be on the lookout in November for, oh my gosh, is the train going off the tracks type of game? And if you have it, you hope it's similar to the BYU game where you can figure it out enough to win it.
No, I agree with you, Chris. I think, you know, if this offense with the pass game and the moving Rippon and Cozart in and getting the best out of both of them, and Madison seemingly able to get 100 yards every game. No, I think this football team now looks like the team that was picked to win the division at the beginning of the year, and picked pretty handily to win the division at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, I still can't figure out why the quarterback thing is working. Like, that's the other thing. Like, I always ask myself, okay, if something has changed, why has it changed? Now, I mean, why? I mean, certainly Cozart's playing more than he was at the beginning of the year as a traditional quarterback, but I still can't figure out how in the world are they navigating this without any problems yet. Like, that's the one thing of, all right, what happens if there are multiple drives in a row where the two quarterback thing just isn't working? Could it be something that snowballs and none of them get into a rhythm, and now your whole offense is stalled because of the two quarterback thing? Maybe that can happen,
but
maybe it won't.
But this is, but that's the same token as your other arguments, Chris. I'm talking about, you know, well, if something hasn't surfaced, I mean, the last couple of weeks that hasn't surfaced.
Exactly. So why do you think it will?
I don't.
Yeah.
I mean, as far as the two guys, I think you're asking why it works. I think the biggest reason why it works is that the two guys themselves have bought in and are making it work, I think is the biggest thing of why it's working.
Because it was fun and kind of unique to hear Rippon after the game kind of mention that it wasn't comfortable for him at first. And he said that, you know, every quarterback wants to be the guy. And at a certain point, he realized with this team that for it to reach its ceiling, that you needed both of them to play. I kind of wonder at what point did he realize that? And I don't think you'll ever get the answer from him about, like, putting down a moment. Was it a practice? Was it a game? Was it a drive? Was it something specific that happened and made it seem like, all right, yes, we need to use both of these quarterbacks for us to reach our ceiling? But you're right. Like, you know, Rippon seems like he's cool enough with it. Cozart every time you ask him a question, he basically turns it into, well, I came here to do whatever it takes to get Boise State a Mountain West championship. You could ask him what the weather was today, and Montel will kind of spin it towards that answer.
Well, was it Kansas's win total in the 4 years he was there, 8?
Yeah, something like that.
He's got 6 right now.
So, well, I mean, on his way.
Know, and he might have a chance to measure his finger for a ring. You know, wasn't even close to that at Kansas. So, yeah, I mean, he's obviously enjoying it. But it's funny, as the season has moved along in the month of October, and tell me how unique this is for football. You've gravitated from what maybe you thought was multiple running backs to a feature back.
Mm-hmm.
And you've gone from a position, a quarterback, that you generally think is going to be one guy to playing two guys.
Yeah, it is kind of, you'd never, why do we even talk about football in spring football in the preseason? Like, why do we even do it? It's pointless. What happens during the season completely changes what we talked about going in. My last thing about this, I could probably point out Boise State's road games and say every one of their road games has been better than every one of their home games played. Like, their best 4 games might be their best, their road games. Washington State, Utah State, BYU, and one of the ones
San
Diego State. Yeah, their 4 best games played this year were all on the road, and thus their worst games have all been at home. Why is that continuing? Or maybe it won't continue because they'll have a really good game against Nevada come on Saturday, and that will, in theory, will go out the window. But it's just something I'm noticing. Like, very rarely is a team's 4 best games of the year all their road games, which means all their worst games, and not all of them were bad, but just saying compared to their road games, the 4 worst ones that they've played have been the home ones.
And you'd say that the schedule, looking at it, has been fairly balanced. I think maybe even you might even say that some of the road teams were, as a group, maybe a little, even a little harder than the home teams. I mean, you look at Utah State, they came in 2-2. They're now 2-3. They have lost all 3 conference games at home. They have won both their road games. But when you look at the names of the opponents, it's pretty obvious the 2 easiest games on the schedule were San Jose and UNLV. Mm-hmm. You played those on the road, you beat them. Colorado State, Wyoming, and Boise State have visited Logan. Those are the 3 best teams on their schedule, and they lost to them. So, you know, I don't even think you can break it down where one of the teams, you know, on the home or away has been better or worse. I don't know. It just looks like they've played with more passion and they've started faster on the road.
Ooh. Using the passion word, though, you got to play with passion at home. I mean, more passion on the road, you get it, but that needs to translate at home. The home crowd wants to see Boise State at their ceiling, because I can say Boise State hasn't played at their ceiling yet on the blue, where the fans go out and put them long hours in and sometimes deal with some rough conditions to watch them play. So I'm sure they'd like to see it against Nevada, Boise State actually play up to their potential at home.
Don't wait to enjoy a Prater Hater Lager Beer. The Ram in Boise and Meridian is serving up the popular Brew by the Pint for a limited time only. Get a limited edition Prater Hater 22-ounce bottle and custom black t-shirt only at the Ram on Broadway in Boise. The Prater Hater, pouring now at the Ram. Coming up next, a sports update. NFL happenings. You want to talk about exciting. There haven't been a whole lot of NFL games that have been exciting, but that Houston-Seattle game was the one I saw over the weekend, and boy, did I see a couple of good quarterbacks making defenses look bad. That's in the update next on Sports Radio The Ticket.
This Ticket Sports Update is sponsored by the Hawaii Tavern. Make your next dinner occasion in downtown Boise at the newest urban-inspired spot in town, the Hawaii Tavern Steak and Sea on 11th and Main, where we're talking about the World Series. Got a text from Postal Grandpa. He said, I love pitcher's duels, but last night was great. Over 400 total pitches thrown. Crazy strike zone was odd, but I thought it was consistently odd.
Geico umpire. Wasn't a fan of the Geico umpire with the strike zone. Bob, if you missed it, the Geico umpire, he was called the Geico umpire because of that Geico commercial where the ref over-explains things. This home plate umpire was over-explaining every ball that was there. This is low and outside. Hi. No, inside. It's just like, yo, chill for a minute. But I was a fan of him. But yeah, strike zone was a little inconsistent. You're right. He was given that inside strike and a little off the plate away, too, were being called strikes, but inconsistently.
And it's funny. He's generally considered a pitcher's umpire, and it certainly wasn't a pitcher's game.
Well, we'll get into the NFL before we get to the craziness that was the Seattle versus Houston game. Sunday night featured Pittsburgh Steelers with the Detroit Lions, and the Steelers without Martavius Bryant. He was demoted to the practice squad after an outburst on social media where he went after his teammate Juju Smith-Schuster, saying that he was so much better than Juju. Wonder if he still thinks that after this happened.
Roethlisberger from the gun will...
throw from his end zone, floats it over the middle. Juju Smith-Schuster is there at the 40. Up the middle at midfield to the 40. Off to the races at the 30. Steps through a tackle at the 20. Inside the 10. And all the way for the touchdown. Juju Smith-Schuster, 97 yards. And the rookie provides a lightning bolt for the Steelers, who take a 19-12 lead.
Juju Smith-Schuster ended the game with 197 yards in that touchdown. On the season, Bryant has 234 yards and a touchdown.
I think Juju's got that job as long as nobody steals his bike again.
He doesn't even need a bike.
Yeah,
he outran the whole defense.
That's right. Forget the bike, man. He just used his wheels, covering 97 yards that quickly. Nobody can chase him. He's had quite the last 2 weeks. From hitting him up on Twitter to stealing the bike to getting touchdowns. Martavis Bryant coming after him. Now he has the most touchdowns apparently for anybody under the age of 21 in NFL history, or he's right there with it. He's having quite the exciting time.
Did you see the one of the times I flipped over on commercial just to check the game out? He had, I guess, made a catch or a score, and he went to the bike because a lot of times receivers or players, when they're, you know, when the defense is on the field, will want to stay loose, so they're pedaling on the bike. He put a padlock on it when he left to go back out on the field.
He's making sure nobody steals his bike once again. He's turning into a fun guy. And I think the Steelers perhaps needed that, because it seemed like early in the season that was the most miserable locker room in the NFL. And he's actually added an element of fun to it that it looks like the rest of the players enjoy him too.
Well, sometimes you got to get rid of somebody if they're a cancer on the team. Sometimes you got to trade somebody or cut him just to get rid of him. I'm not saying that Martavis Bryant is that, but I might be looking at him and saying good riddance.
Well, speaking of fun, it seems like every single game Deshaun Watson plays in now is a fun game. First round pick, threw for 402 yards and 4 touchdowns in a 41-38 loss to Seattle Seahawks. Watson now has 19 touchdowns in his first 7 games. That breaks a record held by Kurt Warner. And the Seahawks win required the first 400 career passing game from Russell Wilson. And after the game, this is what Wilson had to say about Deshaun Watson.
In terms of the battle of going back and forth, I mean, Deshaun Watson's special. I mean, go ahead and give him the Rookie of the Year. He's a great player. You love watching him.
Is he wrong? Can we just give him Rookie of the Year right now?
Kareem Hunt is somewhere saying, wait a minute, as long as I'm still near the top of the league in rushing, I should still have a shot at this. But, yo, Deshaun Watson, I'm impressed. I thought he would struggle at least a little bit going to Seattle and facing the Legion of Boom. He didn't only struggle. He had the best game that anybody's had going to Seattle to face the Legion of Boom. So he didn't win, and maybe there'll be some people out there who says, oh, no, he's not a winner, even though he won a championship in college and got to the championship game the other year. He's phenomenal. And it's funny that Bill O'Brien is the coach, because Bill O'Brien probably wants nothing to do with a quarterback like him, except he's the only quarterback that's gotten his offense to work.
Well, you know, guys, I don't know. Sometimes I think the combine is, I don't want to say worthless, because you can see some things, but just because you see things happen or in a workout, who's been the best quarterback in college the last couple of years?
Deshaun Watson.
It was Deshaun Watson. I mean, I know on this show we talked about how we thought he was the best quarterback in the draft, and we're not using any analytics, we're not using any, you know, stopwatches. We're just watching football, and we could spot that. I mean, we talked about it last week. Cleveland Browns passed on Carson Wentz. Cleveland Browns passed on Deshaun Watson. Their pick was used to take both of them. Why are the Eagles the best team in the NFC, and why is Houston the top of their division doing well? It's because they both have quarterbacks.
I read a stat that said the Browns are now 1-23 since they passed on Carson Wentz. 0-8 since they passed on Deshaun Watson.
And what, one win the last two seasons?
Yeah.
You can't do that.
Well, here's
That's
the
terrible.
Good news, though. Although this group that was supposed to be so good, I haven't been as impressed with my eyeballs watching this group of quarterbacks that's coming out as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, so we're talking about how Deshaun Watson was so productive in college. There's no quarterback right now in college that's as productive as Deshaun Watson was. Maybe besides Lamar Jackson, but I don't think Lamar Jackson
can't play defense, unfortunately.
There's a lot of other things that are wrong with Louisville, but Lamar Jackson has won a Heisman, so there's some production, but he hasn't reached production levels of Deshaun Watson, that's for sure.
You want to take Jackson over either of those two?
Over who?
Wentz and Watson. I don't think it's close.
Oh, no. Lamar Jackson? No. Wentz wasn't really productive when it comes to your traditional standards of being an FBS quarterback, because he wasn't. So it's hard to, like, measure what his you know, his draft stock was high, but again, it's like he might be similar to the Josh Allen level of you have to do a lot of imagination by level of competition, who he has around right. him and who he's going to face. Like, I compare those two more than I would really compare any of the other quarterbacks to those two.
Right, but if I gave you the number one pick and I said you could trade it for either Wentz or Watson or take it to pick Jackson, you're trading that pick every time.
Oh, yeah, you're taking Wentz or Watson, yeah.
Well, speaking of trading for production, at least two teams have reached out to the Detroit Lions to try and trade for very productive receiver in his prime, Calvin Johnson. Johnson, of course, retired before the season started, and the Lions haven't said no, though I don't know if they have handled it in the most productive way for the team. They've told teams, why not reach out to Johnson, see what he says, which they said has come back as non-committal at best. I don't know why the Lions just say, yeah, trade for him. We'll trade him your rights, then you figure out if he wants to play for you.
Exactly. You don't need to give them a warning. No, Calvin Johnson told me personally, he's a close personal friend, that he would play for any team that trades for him. So give me your fourth round pick. Wait, he doesn't want to play for you? I had no idea.
If the Lions said he's a close personal friend, then they know you're lying.
Yeah, I don't seem like they're exactly the best of friends since retirement.
If you thought you could coax him back, I think he'd be a good addition, but he retired. You'd have to know, I think, before you went and got some.
And then one more thing, sort of a scary situation in the NFL, but good news, it sounds like Zach Miller is doing well after his emergency surgery. He dislocated his knee in the Bears loss to the Saints, and there was rumors that he might have had to have his leg amputated, very similar to a Teddy Bridgewater type situation, but so far, reports say he's doing well in his emergency surgery today.
Yeah, there was like something that, like an artery or something in there that was in danger with the dislocation, so they had to take care of that before they even dealt with the dislocation. And that just, every week there's something that happens in the NFL that makes me think, oh my goodness, I'm so glad I never played this, because this game looks so dangerous. And during the month of October, you have every sport going on, from, you know, college football, NFL, NBA, NHL, Major League Baseball, everything's coming together at once. And the more you think about it, the more it's like, why does anybody choose football? It's like, there's all these other sports where they don't look like they're in as much pain while they're playing, and there isn't that many catastrophic things that can happen to your body, or at least it seems like more of the catastrophic things happen to you when you're playing football. And there's all these other choices of sports where you could be playing that at the highest level too. But I know that football is special to a lot of people, and there's some stuff about the game of football that just isn't there in other sports. But I just watch it every Sunday, and I'm like, man, there's a certain person that can do it, and I'm not one of them.
Well, and that play was one of the worst injuries I've seen in a while, and just going to the actual part of the game, I was shocked that they overturned that.
I thought he caught it. I watched the replay. I don't know
whoa,
how he
whoa,
did
whoa, 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 whoa. You watched it.
I watched the replay.
You watched it.
I turned on the last 2 minutes of the game after the second Mark Ingram fumble. And you're telling me how stressful it is to not watch? It is so stressful to watch these games. Marcus Lattimore picks off a Trubisky pass like, all right, we won. And then he starts running down the field like he's going to turn it for a touchdown. And I'm screaming at my TV, get down. I think I lost more years watching that game in 2 minutes, Chris.
So
than
you
I did
watch it.
I watched
you
2 minutes.
Your mind.
2 minutes. I couldn't handle it anymore. I had to watch it.
So you broke. I broke you.
And then I realize why I don't watch it, because I was screaming at my TV for Marcus Lattimore to just hit the field, and he nearly fumbled.
So who do the Saints play next week?
They play the Buccaneers.
Are you going to watch?
No. Not after what I had to witness in 2 minutes. It was so hard to watch. We had a kicker horse collaring to save a touchdown, and then our interception by the defense, and the guy didn't want to drop down.
Fish, whether you watch or not makes no difference. Watch. Enjoy.
I didn't enjoy those last 2 minutes. I don't enjoy beating the Bears by 8 points and probably losing if the refs give a good touchdown to Zach Miller.
Need a Halloween costume? Got to go trick-or-treating. Hit Twin Peaks on Halloween for lunch or after work and pick up your free Caves Prater or JP mask and flask. Check out the leather and lace Twin Peaks girls. Grab lunch or a happy hour with Caves and Prater and get your mask and flask. It's real scary. Exclusively from Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM The Ticket. Up next, what we've learned on today's show from both Boise State and about baseball. That's next when we come back on Sports Radio The Ticket. Treasure Valley Prep Rally. It's brought to you by Mountain West Bank. It's Thursdays at 4:45 on IST with Caves and Prater. Each week, a high school football coach will discuss the game of the week, so don't miss it. Mountain West Bank, love where you bank.
It's time to find out what we learn on today's show on Idaho Sports Talk with Bob and Chris. It's sponsored by Pro-Am Sports, your full-service pro shop and bowling specialist with high-quality bowling balls, bags, shoes, and accessories located right inside Westie's Garden Lanes in Garden City. Before we get what we learned from Coach Harsin's press conference, we got a text on the commercial hire text line. It says, Bob, I'm a huge Giants fan. I don't know how we will compete with no sluggers on our team. What do you think?
I think they're going to try to get Giancarlo Stanton from Fish's Marlins, and I'm hoping that they don't have to give up a whole lot other than just agreeing to pay the salary, which I think the Giants could probably handle. So I would like to see him playing right field for the Giants next season.
Do you need one slugger in today's game of baseball?
No, or do you need more, but at least that's a start.
I'm about to say, do you need one super slugger or just a bunch of guys who can hit 20 home runs? I feel like that's what the Astros have. They have a bunch of guys who can hit 20 home runs, and they can strike at any moment. And at this point, 20 home runs is not even going to be enough of a season for you to even look up and say, hey, this guy has power. You might need to hit at least 30 for you to be considered plus power.
Pitchers are going to start hitting 20.
Or maybe they'll switch back and they won't use the balls they used this year. They only made enough for one season.
No, they can't go back.
You can't go back.
You cannot go back.
If you go back, no one will turn into baseball again.
Absolutely not. You've gotten to this point. Last thing we need is to go back. Please. You've gotten us to the edge. You've hooked everybody in. Do not pull the line from us and take away the baseballs. Like, people are like, do you care if the baseballs are juiced? Yes, I care. You can't go back and take them away. I care now. So, yeah, bring them on.
And it's time to get what we learned in the Coach Harsin press conference. First, we learned Boise State. They're going to play Nevada this weekend in the homecoming game. It was once considered a rivalry game for Boise State, but with how the Mountain West is structured, we don't play Nevada every year. And this was Coach Harsin had to say about Boise State and Nevada being a rival.
As far as rivalry goes, I think you have to play every single year. I think everybody would say that. Well, you have to play them every year. They got to be a team that you're always you see year in and year out. But I still feel like, in my mind, Boise State, Nevada, that's a big game. That's a rivalry game. That's a game that everybody looks forward to. That's a game you want to play in. That's a game that over the years has been really good.
So it is rivalry.
Right. I think when you look back on it, there have been a lot of important games played between Boise State and Nevada, and a lot of games that have, you know, been exciting games, big overtime. I think it was a 3-overtime game with Colin Kaepernick and Nevada here, and then of course the game in 10 that cost Boise State an undefeated season down there. So there have been some big games in the series. You know, I think it's too bad Boise State doesn't play Fresno State and doesn't play Nevada every season.
We need to mix and match the divisions a little bit more. Yeah, it's just a thing that a good number of these players haven't faced Nevada before. Mm-hmm. So, like, how do they have the type of hate that a rivalry is supposed to have if, a lot of this team is unfamiliar with facing the Wolfpack, especially this defense?
Well, I mean, you look at it. BYU is an out-of-conference game, and everybody that's on the roster has played BYU every year. Mm-hmm. You know, we haven't seen Nevada in two seasons. Did not play them in 16, didn't play them in 15. So it's been a while, and, you know, they've changed coaches. They have a new coach this year. Polian was hardly there, taking over for Chris Ault. So, I think a lot of it just being different makes, to me at least, this game with Nevada feel different and not feel like some of the other Nevada games in the past.
And then perhaps the most important thing we learned from Coach Harsin today, tomorrow is Halloween, and someone asked Coach Harsin what his favorite candy is. And then Harsin gave us a special little nugget if you plan on going out on trick-or-treating tomorrow.
I don't really have anything that's that special. I'm kind of a whatever, Kit Kat, Snickers. I like them all. I would probably say favorite, Harrison Boulevard, all right. Along there's always the full-size candy bars, all right. It's Baby Ruth, it's Snickers, it's Butterfingers, all right. That is the place to go.
He's got the scouting report all down.
A guy growing up in town, he went to that answer, and he kind of was talking about candy, and then all of a sudden something clicked in his mind. You could tell that really happened for Brian Harsin as a child. I guarantee you that, you know, he went there and talked about taking the pillowcase, which was a bigger thing to hold your candy in than one of those, you know, those little jack-o'-lantern buckets that a lot of kids have going around.
He sounded more decisive about his candy than he does about his quarterbacks. So what kind of world are we living right now? Anyway, he's got this all figured out. Jeff Caves is in the studio. He's got Idaho Sports Talk from 3 to 6 coming up next. What we got coming up?
Right to the firing line we go with Dave Southern of the Idaho Statesman and Prater taking on the quarterback situation. How many wins and losses Boise State the guys think they may end up with, the championship game, the group of five conversation, and we'll spend some time on what if the baseball is juiced. Forget about whether it is or not, but you know, what if that baseball is juiced? Sounds like majority of people may like it. Some may think it's deceiving, and you know, there's everybody else in between who could be waiting to do something else anyway.
Yeah, you see the joke that Jose Canseco made about this? If you haven't, just go look it up. I can't repeat it on the radio, but it's very Jose Canseco-like. It's about the juiced balls, and you can kind of get your own implication for what Jose Canseco was talking about. But that was fun. I know you don't always like lock in, but this involves your Dodgers, Jeff, so as much as you're a fan of any one team, you're probably locked into this a bit. As somebody who has at least a little bit invested in it, what's it like watching from the emotional standpoint? Because for me, you know, either team can win, and it doesn't make any difference for me.
Oh, I'm already ready to quit when I see 11-8 scores. Ah, they'll never come back, because I've seen a lot of baseball where that was the case, and this is the first time in a long time I can remember being involved in a World Series with top pitchers that it's just meaningless who's pitching any in those games last night. It seems like in this series it's taken away what I thought was the most dominant part of the sport, really, for most of my adult life, where the best pitchers won. And that's certainly not the case right now. And maybe more and more people do enjoy that, and that's where baseball wants to go.
Yeah, I'm with it. Well, we'll be listening coming up in about 10 minutes from now, Idaho Sports Talk with Jeff, Mike, a firing line, so it means that everybody will have a voice and something to say about Boise State and the result against Utah State. So, Bob, coming up tomorrow, we kind of delve into Nevada a little bit and learn about a squad that's, what, a 20-point underdog to Boise State? They haven't really been too good this year.
I was going to say they've won one game, although they've had two near misses the last two games by last week, so they can really be ready to go for Boise State, but they lost by 3 to Air Force, by 2 to Colorado State. Both games, both teams were in the 40s, so their offensive side of the ball much, much better than their defensive side of the ball tomorrow. Also, college football playoff gets announced around 5 o'clock, so we've been doing it every week, Chris, so it's our last one out before we see where the committee wants to go.
Yeah, we'll go into whether we expect any surprises, too, because the committee likes to throw us a little surprise on the first week. Kind of get the people talking. All right, Bob, appreciate you joining it at 2 to 3. Now, coming up next, Idaho Sports Talk with Caves and Prater on Sports Radio, The Ticket.
Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.